I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Nick Pope with us. So Nick, this was released during this pandemic situation, and I got to tell you, it kind of buried the story. Normally, if the story like this would be released on a non-news event moment, it would get a lot of publicity. It did not get a lot of publicity. Do you think that was done on purpose?
Yes, I think there's a strong suspicion here that the timing was a little bit planned, orchestrated. In the United Kingdom, there's a phrase, and this dates from something that happened just after 9/11. We call it a good day to bury bad news.
That's right.
Yeah, what happened was immediately after the towers came down, a senior political advisor said, essentially, it's a slight misquote, but the sense of it was, if we've got any bad news, any inconvenient truths, any announcements that we've been worried about making, let's get them out now, because I tell you what, nothing else apart from 9/11 is going to be in the news cycle. So there is a suspicion that the Pentagon choosing this week to put out this story is a way of getting it out there. They had to do that, I think, getting it out there, but at the one time when the whole world was looking the other way.
There's a joke about a politician who lost his election, and somebody was asking him, so what happened? How'd you lose? You were ahead in the polls. He said, I screwed up on a slow news day. And that's true. You know, you got a slow news day, a story like the videos would be huge. But if they're meshed in with a whole bunch of other breaking stories, like the coronavirus, it doesn't take top priority at all. Nick, when you were with the British Ministry of Defense, tell folks who are new to you what you did with those UK files.
Well, we had about 200 or 300 UFO sighting reports each year. And we had to investigate those to determine if there was a threat to the defense of the UK. And we'd had a program. I mean, goodness, we'd had UFO sightings, of course, since the Second World War. But we had a formally constituted UFO program since 1953. So I certainly wasn't the first person to have this job. And we had to research and investigate. And we looked at it like all of government looking at anything, we looked at it in terms of what are the threats and what are the opportunities. And the threats would be, obviously, if any of this did turn out to be, for example, Russia or China, or even if it turned out to be extraterrestrial and we didn't know what the agenda was. And the opportunities, of course, the big opportunities, and this gets to the heart of the Pentagon's interest in all this, the big opportunity is technology acquisition. My goodness, if any of this is real, the technology, for example, to travel between the stars, both in terms of being able to accomplish that, but also, of course, in terms of the energy required. The nation on Earth that first acquires that technology will be the dominant power on Earth for foreseeable future.
What's so great about this, too, though, is the great ufologists of the past and present, the late Stanton Friedman, the many ufologists today, all of them that you know and we know, you know, they got to be relishing this because they could be vindicated soon enough, don't you think?
Absolutely, yes. I think for years this subject languished somewhat. It was seen as fringe. It was either ignored by the mainstream media or when they did discuss it, it was laughed at or dismissed in terms of science fiction memes and things like that. And now here we are having a grown-up conversation about it. We have pilots, we have radar operators, we have intelligence community personnel who've been directly involved in this, and we have the president and various senators who've been briefed coming forward and saying things like, well, it's a hell of a video.
We've been losing some great UFO conferences because of the coronavirus scare. We've lost contact in the desert, which was going to come up the end of May, early June. That's been put off for at least a year. That kind of hurts the field, doesn't it?
It does. People enjoy these events. They obviously turn up to learn, to listen to the latest findings from researchers, but also, of course, to network with colleagues and friends. And I think I think it will bounce back. I think once we get over the sort of excessive fear about this, and once we realize what we're really dealing with, I think there'll probably be a backlash against all of this. There'll have to be a full inquiry, of course. And
yep.
Conferences, like all big social events, whether they're sporting, whether they're scientific, academic, whatever, they'll be back with a vengeance, and people will be glad to be back and mingling and learning and having fun again.
Dr. David Jacobs, of course, believes that the UFO visitations are happening and that they're nefarious. They're not very good for us. What do you think of that?
Well, in a sense, that's the default position of government and military. So he's right in one sense. It's far better to assume that something is hostile and be pleasantly surprised and relieved when that doesn't materialize than assume the other way around, kind of figure, oh, yeah, everything will be fine, and then get caught with your pants down if there is a threat. So I think he's probably at the far end of that spectrum, but in a sense he's only reflecting that sort of natural military intelligence community caution that comes from any situation like this.
Do you think that if these occupants of UFOs, assuming that's where they're coming from other lands, other planets, if they get here with the technology they have, however they're getting here, whether they're bending space and time or whatever, that there's probably no way we can defend ourselves against a hostile group that might come here?
Yes, there is no way. I think people don't really get the distances involved and things. And sometimes I hear people say, but we've got a space program too, you know.
And we've got missiles and we've got all this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the technology gap between, say, the European explorers and, say, the Native Americans, the indigenous populations of Central and Southern America, I don't know what you would estimate that technology gap as being, a few hundred years or something like that. In a universe nearly 14 billion years old, we might be dealing with civilizations with millions of years head start on us.
Exactly.
And then we're back to that classic Arthur C. Clarke quote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
I mean, if you look at how technology has grown in just 100 years, even less. I mean, we went to the moon, 57 years ago, something like that? I mean, truly remarkable technology in such a short time span. And as you said, Nick, add a million years to it or 100,000, assuming knowledge grows at the same pace all over the place. I mean, jump-starting a civilization 200,000 years from the technology we have today, they could be walking on water.
Absolutely. A couple of hundred years ago, the fastest way we traveled was probably on horseback at a fast gallop.
And a stagecoach.
Yeah, and now stealth fighters and space rockets. And yeah, fast forward that. Imagine a civilization with a few million years technological head start on us. And it's not just going to be like going up against stealth fighters and aircraft carriers with bow and arrow. It's going to be orders of magnitude beyond that. So we would frankly have no chance at all. Zero. Literally zero.
Got an email from one of our listeners last week who said, George, those people who are on stagecoaches back in the 1800s getting from one place to another, and they were long rides, what did they do when they had to go to the bathroom? And I just emailed them back and said, I don't care. But it's technology. Technology continues to change. And it's conceivable that if these visitations are real, here's the other question. Why are they coming here? Is it the Zechariah Sitchin theory that they seeded us, that they created us? Maybe they're watching us again, Nick? Or what do you think their purpose is to come here? Are they curious? What is it?
Well, I like to think that they come here as scientists. They come here as anthropologists. And to truly ancient and advanced civilizations with millions, perhaps a billion or 2 years head start on us, maybe newly emerging civilizations like us represent truly the last interesting and new thing in the cosmos for them to study.
Absolutely. Nick, this is one of the most amazing possibilities I think we've ever had in our modern time, and that's these videos that were done. In, you know, if it's aircraft that Boeing has created for the government or something, I don't think the Pentagon would release it, do you?
No. If this was some secret prototype aircraft, missile, or drone, absolutely. You would deny, you wouldn't put it out at all. And here's another interesting point about all this. As we've said, these videos have been seen before. The story was dying down. There was no need, really, for the Pentagon to put this out there, but they put it out there themselves. Now, you do not put out, I mean, can you imagine? The stealth fighter, for example, was flying for years before it was publicly declared. You didn't have a situation where they put out videos of it while it was still undeclared and totally unacknowledged. No, so that does certainly put the idea that it's our own tech a little bit on the back burner, and because, as you say, why would you put it out there?
Absolutely. You know, one of the books that got me into this field in the first place was done by former New York Times science writer Walter Sullivan, and the book is called We Are Not Alone, and it came out a long, long time ago. And, you know, his theory was we're simply not alone in the universe. And when you look at the vastness of this universe, isn't it really inconceivable to even try to assume that we're alone?
Totally. I mean, the more we find out, it's like almost literally every week there's a new story, astronomy story about we found this, we found that, we've got better images of this. We're looking farther and farther out. And the more we look, the more we find, the less special we seem to be. And that's good, I think, in a sense. And literally, there's nothing magic about planet Earth. It's the old Copernican principle. If you walk, I mean, just to give a silly example, but if you walk into a room, you're not going to be the tallest person in the room. You're not going to be the shortest. You know, you'll probably be somewhere in the middle, sort of basic statistics. So same with planet Earth. We're just going to find that we're a fairly ordinary planet orbiting a fairly ordinary star, and there's nothing magic or special about us. And just as life has evolved here, it's probably evolved millions and millions of times out there in the cosmos.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.